No doubt money topics are difficult. They stem from emotion and they can bring up so much, let's say, unresolved trauma that individuals have. It can bring up so many, you know, value sets that individuals have or value sets that people have that, you know, they were raised with.
Hi, my name is Mina Kim, your host of The Click Line. I've worked on Wall Street for over 14 years. Then I built out Orange Theory Fitnesses and sold them to a private equity firm. And upon that exit, started investing in women and minority startups, as well as advising women who are getting divorce with financial consulting and strategy. Hey guys, you know what's the best way to get in touch with your friends? Sharing an episode of the Click Line podcast. So don't forget to like, subscribe, and share the episodes. And let me know what you think in the comments. Welcome to this episode of the Click Line. Today we have Jackie Combs. She's a partner at Blank Rome, which has over 800 attorneys across 16 locations in the US. She has a background in corporate counsel for both private and publicly traded companies, and is now a family law and matrimonial attorney here in LA who represents high net worth clients across a diverse range of industries, including sports, entertainment, content creation, finance, tech and innovation. You've seen her in the New York Times, USA Today, Business Insider, as well as a number of podcasts, and now The Click Line. She's known to handle celebrity and high profile cases. Thank you so much for being on, Jackie. Welcome to The Click Line.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here, Mina.
Same. I know we've been talking for a bit, so I'd love to have you on. I'm just curious to start, what made you want to transition from corporate law to matrimonial family law?
I know it's a little bizarre, isn't it? When I was a corporate attorney, I had a great position. I worked in-house at a publicly traded company, First American Title Insurance Company, and I ran multiple different business lines, reported into the general counsel, and was with the company on and off, I think, about 7 years from law school out. And it was great, but I needed something that had a little bit more human contact and serendipitously fell into family law and haven't looked back.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I've had multiple pivots in my career, too. So it's always interesting to see people's career path. So I know financial intimacy and the modern partnership is something that you really like to talk about.
Yeah.
And you specialize in. And interestingly enough, I'm looking at, you know, a company as well that's looking at the burden that the mom has.
Yeah.
As a working mom and as a stay-at-home mom. And 65% of working moms report burnout, anxiety, and depression. And on average, I bet you think this number is higher in reality, but on average, spend 30 hours just planning, remembering, and coordinating.
I mean, mental load, right? It's
right.
unmatched.
Yep. And then there's $1 trillion in lost production annually.
Wow.
Due to the lack of family care, poor health, mental and physically, and absenteeism in the workforce. And what's even crazier is that if we spend more research money on women's health, which only gets 4% currently, we would have $1 trillion adding to the GDP if we were to address this for women. And so it's a big, big topic on financial intimacy, women's health, and, you know, addressing all of these concerns that affect 51% of the population.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I did not realize, the stat that you just pulled out about how much lost productivity is incredible. And it makes sense, right? I have a four-year-old, and I don't know if you have any children, but I have a four-year-old son, and he's in preschool. And already, I'm already setting up so many extracurricular activities. You know, I have him in speech therapy, OT, you know, and just trying to maintain his schedule on top of my own is and my husband's is a lot.
Right. And you don't get compensated for it.
Well, I'm not.
So that brings us into, for women who are working moms and that you're seeing as your clients, as well as stay-at-home moms.
Yeah.
How is that accounted for in the processes and cases that you're seeing?
Yeah, it's a great question. So one of the things, and I'm a California family law attorney, and in California, we have alimony or spousal support, right? So if a mom decides to stay at home, or any partner who makes less money, let's say, than their other spouse, there is an opportunity, absent a prenup that, you know, modifies or waives it, for them to receive spousal support. And that kind of helps them bridge the gap and to stay afloat and stay at the marital standard of living to the extent that they are able to do so. Now, for a marriage in California, we have this like quasi 10-year rule. So a marriage that's less than 10 years, spousal support is typically one half the length of the marriage. And for a marriage that's longer than 10 years, spousal support, the court retains jurisdiction. So it's, the court won't just end it after, you know, half length of the marriage. And if you're married 30 plus years, you know, you might receive support for the rest of your life. That being said, what I really see is it is in practicality that, you know, that sounds great, but in practicality, it's not reality. You know, it is more expensive to maintain two households. And for so many individuals, and particularly women, if they knew what they would receive in spousal support, or what they would receive in a property division, and how they could maintain their lifestyle would be significantly less, they might not stop working, right? So they may continue to work. And, you know, those choices, which is what I'm so passionate about talking about, those choices in life that we make, sometimes we think are rooted in the best decision for our family, but we don't understand the financial or the legal consequences that could arise 10 years down the road.
Right. That's such an important point because, yeah, theoretically, you're like, oh, it's great.
Yeah.
I don't have to work. And then, you know, if something does happen, you think you'll be taken care of. But there's so many factors in that. And also, what, you know, if the ex has a significant decrease in income.
Correct.
And that can change things as well. And as you age, things change. And so those are all important factors, which is why I also always advocate for women to have your own career business happening. So you have your own, you're generating your own income.
Right.
And taking charge of your finances.
Absolutely. And even if, you know, listen, we're in a modern world and there is no judgment by me, right? I have so many clients who are stay-at-home moms. I have so many clients who work. Regardless of what your decision is in your family, you must have autonomy. That is non-negotiable in any relationship. So if you're going to be a stay-at-home mom, you need to know what that, you know, like I said earlier, that financial consequence may be. And maybe you will make adjustments in, you know, whether it's signing a prenup or signing a postnuptial agreement where you can ensure that you have financial stability down the road. And, you know, I don't know if you saw this week, but there was this viral clip of the stay-at-home mom who was talking about, after 7 years of marriage, raising two children, not working, her husband told her he wanted to proceed with divorce. And she basically said she was not on the deed of her house. She had no source of income. And all she had was access to an Amex that which she put her expenses on. And after telling her he wanted a divorce, he told her she needed to start paying for her expenses and should no longer use the Amex that he was covering. And that is as scary as it sounds. And, you know, I saw so many clips and comments on that. That is a financial reality in so many relationships. And being CEO of the household is just as important as being CEO outside of the household, as long as you guys are aligned and transparent of what that is going to mean financially, whether you're together or if you know, the relationship ends.
So if she was your client, what advice would you give her?
Well, I would have first said, let's have a conversation about you not being on the deed, right? What was the transaction? You know, where did the money come from? I think there's a multitude of different factors to consider. You know, what state she's in, which I actually don't know. But, you know, how we're going to navigate this process to ensure that she's taken care of, you know, moving forward and in the long run. But of course, you know, at some point she'll need to get a job.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so if there's someone in that type of situation right now, before the divorce is filed, but they only have access to the Amex and don't have access to any of the funds, should they start looking for a job or a side hustle and start get their own bank account and start saving up some money so they can prepare for what's next in their life?
Absolutely. I think that all individuals in any relationship need access to cash. Bottom line.
Yeah, 200%. This topic is also very important to me because my father passed away when I was 18, very early and sudden. And he took care of, you know, paying things, doing all of this stuff. And my mother was, you know, didn't know how anything ran.
Right.
So very early on, it was apparent to me that, oh, crap, you have to be in charge of your finances. And I think that's what has kind of also molded my money mindset over time.
Yeah.
Of I want my own thing no matter what. And I've always wanted to be in finance and business and things like that. So I think that a lot of the money intimacy issues do stem from childhood and trauma. And so have you seen any kind of these correlations in the stories of people that you've, you know, your clients?
Yeah. Well, while I can't speak about, you know, individual clients and I maintain my clients' confidentiality, I would definitely say just in my own personal world, whether it's clients, myself, my friends, we all, and like you just said, we all have a money story. And it's a story that we tell ourselves and it's a story that we were raised with. And, you know, we have to decide as adults if that money story is going to impact the rest of our life. Are we going to live in fear? Are we going to make decisions because of X, Y, and Z happened to this person? But like you, and you know, Reese Witherspoon spoke about this recently, about she has known, you know, so many women who have had a financial crisis, so to speak, and the importance of having access to cash, the importance of never letting somebody control you with money, the importance of understanding what your financial, you know, lifeline is, right? And speaking, you know, with your experience with your mom, I've had so many, you know, clients who have had this moment in the divorce process where they, you know, there was always a financial, I like to call it like a financial uh-oh, or a financial surprise, right? That you realize during this process that you were not anticipating. For example, you know, there was a second mortgage taken out on the home that you were not aware of, or, you know, the funds were dwindled down, or your spouse may have had a gambling addiction that you were not aware about and, you know, dwindling down your funds. The retirement accounts are, you know, the beneficiaries are other people, just so many different things that can arise when there lacks that communication, transparency, and intimacy.
Right. And so how do you address that? I mean, by the time they come to you, it's already a problem, right?
Yeah.
And so what advice would you give people out there on trying to get ahead of the curve?
So I do also work with so many clients who are getting prenups or cohabitation agreements and, you know, postnuptial agreements, so all aspects, right? But to your point about divorce point, might be a little too late, but there's still the next chapter if they decide to get remarried. I think that there are four must-haves in your relationship, and I refer to them as the four dimensions of financial intimacy. It's transparency, number one. Number two, communication. Three, alignment. And four, autonomy. With every financial decision that you make in your relationship, you need those four things. And I would say for any young couple who is starting out their life together, you know, there's so many different legal complexities because there's separate property, there's inheritance, there's, you know, people get married later in life, they may own a home or they may have started their career different. No circumstance fits every situation, given the nuances of everyday life and everybody's financial circumstances. So you can create a framework that works for your financial circumstances. That's what's important. And you have to be aligned on that. You don't have to agree on everything, but you have to be aligned.
So if we're talking about for the folks who are dating, right? At what point in the relationship would you suggest that they start addressing these four pillars, because I think that is so smart and so important. And a lot of people don't during the dating period. And then you're like a year or two in and you're like, what is going on here? Right? Financial wise, I didn't know you had all this credit card debt. I didn't know you had this gambling problem.
Yeah.
So how do you suggest people going about that now?
I mean, early on. And Gen Z is actually like trend setting, communicating about money in their relationships within the first 6 months, which is significantly faster than boomers and millennials. I would say that you should be talking about money within the first 6 months if you are serious about somebody and starting a life with them. That doesn't mean on the first date you're going to ask them, what's your account balance, right? Or do you have any student loan debt? However, I think it's fair to throw out questions that are light and fun, such as if you won the lotto today, you know, for $200 million or $100 million, what would you do with that money? And see if that response is aligned with your values. And that's really what it comes down to, is your values. Are you aligned? Does somebody want to, you know, live for forever and save to create generational wealth for their children? Or does somebody else want to just spend it all and not leave anything for their children? And those are two fundamental different value sets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's interestingly, I had a poll on my social asking, do you merge your finances with your partner?
Yeah.
And it was 100% no.
Interesting.
Interesting. Super interesting.
Curious to see what the demographic on that was.
It was a lot of women.
Yeah.
Mostly women, I would say. And they said no. I found that super interesting.
Wow.
So maybe it's like a change in the population now.
Yeah.
Because I think back in the day, it was probably very different,
yeah.
Right?
Well, the one thing that's interesting about that is just because you don't merge your finances or you don't share an account doesn't mean the law doesn't see that you have merged finances. And that's something that's really important to understand, that if you're married and your spouse has a gambling addiction, you may be on the hook for that, you know, loan that he took out.
Right.
So, and your estate could be liable. So it's really important to know that just because you have a separate bank account, it does not mean that that money is not joint.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's so important that you really, who you're partnering with, has the shared values, like integrity that you're looking for. And sometimes that takes time. And so I would, you know, advise people to really make sure to double check, because it is such a taboo topic to talk about.
Right.
But it shouldn't be. Why? I mean, why do you think? I think a lot of women are afraid to address this with their husbands, and it could be a family upbringing, how they viewed money and how their fathers handled it.
Totally.
It could be a cultural thing. But how do they avoid the uncomfortableness and getting over that? Because we all have uncomfortable feelings when something is different and there's change. And some people are really avoidant when it comes to topics that involve kind of like a confrontational aspect to it.
Well, and that word that you just said, confrontational, that's the issue. Money should not be a taboo topic. Money should not be confrontational. You have to create a framework for having a positive conversation. No doubt money topics are difficult. They create they stem from emotion, and they can bring up so much, let's say, unresolved trauma that individuals have. It can bring up so many, like you said, value sets that individuals have or value sets that people have that, you know, they were raised with. And the money story that we tell ourselves, right? So I would say, listen, you have to create a framework for having a positive money conversation. Number one, don't have that conversation when you want a Netflix and chill, okay? Don't have that conversation when somebody is on deadline for work. Don't have that conversation right before the holidays. Create a safe space where you are having a money night or money date night, as I call it, where you're going to say, hey, we're going to talk about these things. This is the order that we're going to talk about them in. And by treating it like a business meeting, you will take so much of the emotion out and you will create a framework where both of you are able to discuss this without judgment, which is a really important thing, to discuss without judgment, as with curiosity, because somebody might not really realize, you know, how triggering these money conversations are to them. And they might become defensive. They might, you know, they might spin out of control or whatever they are. But if you can learn how to communicate about money, then you can start learning how to navigate money together as a couple.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good advice. And so if in different situations, I've seen all the different scenarios where one partner earns more and then deciding how expenses get split.
Right.
There's lots of scenarios to this, but how do you view that makes both partners feel safe and heard without resentment?
Yes. So when there is a financial disparity in relationships, it can create, power dynamics within the relationship. And that's why it's so important to have autonomy. So again, if somebody's going to stay at home or they are going to have, less access to resources because they have a job that, you know, they might be a teacher, or they might have another job that's, you know, they earn less, but it's still an important job. Or, you know, being a stay-at-home mom, it's a very important job. You need to create a framework within your marriage that allows equal access to money for both spouses, so there is no unequal power dynamics. And two, a conversation of how are we going to split the expenses? If we are going to split them that way, is this going to be joint? Are we going to both have some spending, expense allowances that, you know, no questions asked? But I think creating the framework that works for your relationship based on your facts, because it's not going to be, you know, your conversation with your significant other is going to be very different than my conversation with my significant other.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so just so people can have an idea of different types of scenarios, you know, because some people are like, how would you do that? Like, what is a way to address it? You know, some ideas can be one account is for the home expenses.
Right.
Everything related to the home. Electricity, cable, mortgage, property taxes, all of that. And that's home. It has to get paid no matter what.
Correct.
Either you're both contributing or it's coming from an account. So we know that's all covered.
Right.
And then you each have your personal accounts.
Right.
So that's what you use for when you go to Pilates and get a $20 Erewhon smoothie and matcha. And maybe there's like a separate slush account that you use that you save up for, that you buy that really nice jacket that you're saving for, or the girls' trips or the boys' trips. And that one is your own slush account that doesn't get questioned. But the other should be aware of it, right? And know that you're not spending $20,000 on a girls trip or something like that.
Without the conversation. And I think that's what you just said is key. The other person should know, right? You're not going to come home with a brand new car not telling your spouse.
Right.
Right. The only time that would be appropriate is basically if you have a prenup and all of your money is separate property and, you know, your spouse's money is separate property. But even in that scenario, I would say, at least have the conversation. Let them know you're going to come home with a new car.
Right. Totally.
Right.
And then if we layer in retirement and savings accounts and a portfolio, and if you both have separate ones because you had a career before, or if you had a career while you're together, then if you have a wealth advisor, you're doing semi-annual meetings talking about this is where I'm at, this is where they're at.
Right.
Our goal is to retire at 65 and be on a beach somewhere. How far are we from it? And doing these check-ins are super important. And you don't have to merge those two accounts together. You can have them separately, but knowing that it's out there and that you're on the same goal and trying to achieve the same retirement horizon and
absolutely.
On same page for expenses and all of that. Yeah, I do think that's super important to continue to do check-ins. I know it's super uncomfortable for people because it's not anything we're taught. So I had a statistic too on 70% of women say they wish they learned more about money earlier, and only 15% of schools teach personal finance. And I don't think growing up I had personal finance taught at all either.
No, I do vaguely remember when I was in third grade, we learned how to write checks. Now, right.
Zero.
And you know how to balance a checkbook. Exactly. It doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah. So I think that's something that is now coming to light more. And then women are focusing on advocating for ourselves. And look, we need to advocate for ourselves for everything. It's money. It's our health.
Yeah.
It's our careers. Everything.
Absolutely.
Because we are still... Even though 51% of the population, we're still the minority in a lot of things and rights and funding and all of that. So always advocate for yourself in all of these areas. And we want people to have control of not only their own life, but, you know, for their children and future generations to be able to see that. And so... Another fun statistic, not so fun, women still earn about 82 cents on the dollar compared to men. And for minority women, it's even less, like 70 something cents.
Wow.
So this is obviously a systemic problem, but another reason why it's so important for us to take charge of our money and financial stability.
Absolutely.
Because we have to work harder for the same dollar.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And so, you know, as you know, the name of the podcast is called The Click Line.
Yeah.
And so when in your personal or professional career, was there a moment that all of a sudden something clicked?
I think two moments in my life. Okay. Or a couple moments in my life. I'll say this. When I met my husband, it clicked. And he was my partner. And he still is today. We've been together almost 14 years, married 9 years. And I met him the day after I graduated law school. And which, of course, you know, just serendipitously through my best friend actually introduced us. And it clicked. And the reason why is because we are partners. You know, we are partners in all aspects of our lives. And having those money conversations early on, because I met him when I was 23, was so difficult for me. And I grew up in a household where we did not communicate about money. It was like, it was very taboo. Like, we do not discuss those things at the dinner table. And then I met, you know, his family, who was very open about money conversations, which made me feel so uncomfortable. And I had to, you know, work through my own financial shame and how I was taught to discuss money. And, you know, and if I felt that way, and so many of my clients have felt that way, then so many individuals and women, you know, around the world must feel that way. And that is another moment that has, you know, really clicked for me in why I, you know, started Love Richer, is to be able to help people. And, you know, taking a step back, when I transitioned into family law, which I would have never guessed in law school that I would ever be a family law attorney, because when you're a family law, you know, when you learn about family law, you think it's, you know, you're fighting over pots and pans. It's like the worst kind of law to practice, right? I mean, it's that's how it's portrayed, but it's actually very interesting. We have very, you know, my clients, I like to call, think of them more as like businesses. And they are, you know, I'm winding down businesses or I'm merging businesses. And I'm helping clients navigate very interesting and difficult, you know, transitions or positive transitions in their life. and how it relates to money. But when you have clients who are very high net worth, they may have multiple different businesses that they own, you know, intellectual property, real estate issues, tax issues. And so they're very complex financial issues, right? At the end of the day, when I transitioned into family law, I really felt like I was helping people. And that was so important to me. And that's where it clicked.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's also, you know, as a passion project on the side, I also consult and advise high net worth and ultra high net worth women who are going through financially complex divorces. And that was definitely not on the vision board for me anywhere where I was like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to help women getting divorced. It just happened where friends were referring people to me and were like, Mina, you really need to help these people. And it has been literally 100 times more rewarding than anything else. And I'm sure you see it every day. It's like seeing people coming at a really vulnerable time in their life and then going through this process and then blossoming and having this great, you know, running out into the sunset. And then now dating like a wonderful new spouse and having this great life. And so, that's very rewarding and it brings great meaning, you know, to life and career and being able to make a difference. And I always say, invest in the change, right?
That's great.
Yeah. And so now I like to invest in companies that I want to see the change in the world and also investing in people and helping affect change in their life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so what was the other thing that clicked for you?
Well, I think it was a transition into family law. So one meeting my husband, one transitioning family law. Of course, when I had my son was one of the best moments of my life. But, you know, I will say just pivoting back to my husband, you know, I hated the whole bride process. I'll just take it. You know, I hated that. I had the big wedding, but that was really for his parents and my parents. It made me so uncomfortable. And, you know, we're taught to be brides. And young women are taught to be brides. They're not taught to be partners. And what's so important for, I think, younger, you know, couples and younger women specifically to understand is you want to be a partner and you want a partner because you're going to navigate a lot of hard moments in your life. And you want to know that who you are standing with is going to help you weather that storm. And if you guys are not aligned on those little things, you will not be aligned on the big things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Mic drop on that one. Well, thank you so much for being on, Jackie. This is so fun. We love having you. And if anyone wants to reach out to Jackie, she's at love.richer on Instagram, right? Yeah. And your website is love richer. Loverichter.com. Thank you so much for being on The Click Line.
Thanks so much.
Don't forget to send in your questions and comments to The Click Line. And one more thing, the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered professional advice. Please consult with qualified professionals for advice related to your specific situation.